Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We're the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When you're working on a story, especially a documentary or a podcast like this one, in the back of your mind, there's always the hope that somehow something's going to help the story break open in a new way, that there will be breaking news. Our team was in the middle of putting this podcast together, doing interviews, conducting research, constructing the episodes, when we got an alert that Paul Landis, one of President Kennedy's Secret Service agents, was coming forward with new information. A few of the Secret Service agents that were present that day have given interviews. Some have written books. But Mr. Landis has never spoken out. As the New York Times said, he spent much of his life after Dallas fleeing from history, trying to put the horror from that day behind him. But now, at age 88, Mr. Landis decided to share his memories from that day, including one moment that can be considered, if not a smoking gun, a smoking bullet.
Paul Landis was 28 years old on November 22, 1963, and he was positioned on the running board of the car directly behind Kennedy as the motorcade weaved its way through the streets of Dallas and into Dealey Plaza. He agreed to talk to us about what he saw that day. Here's more of the interview we did with him, and I think it paints a vivid picture of what it was like to witness it all. So, Paul, the first thing is, can you just describe what you saw at the moment that the president was hit?
Yes, it was just after we made our turn onto Elm Street, and the two cars, the president's limousine and the follow-up car, were starting to straighten up behind each other when I heard the first shot. I looked at the president. He was leaning a little bit to his left. He was raising his arms, and I just thought that he was reacting to the sound and was turning to see where the sound came from. I did not realize at that point that the president had been hit.
That was the first time he was hit, the first time?
The first time. His arms were flying up from the impact, but I didn't realize he'd been hit at that time. So I turned and I'm looking over my right shoulder where the sound came from, didn't see anything. Scanned down across what became known as the grassy knoll, and I scanned across the top of the underpass we were approaching. And at that time, I was just happened to be looking in the president's direction again, and I heard the second shot. And just shortly after the second shot, I heard the third shot. I saw the president's head split wide open, a mist of blood and flesh and brain matter flew into the air. Ugh. I ducked to avoid getting splattered. And at that point, we zoomed under the underpass and we were on our way to Tarpon Memorial Hospital.
So that fatal shot that you describe, you're saying that that brain matter was flying towards you, right?
Yes, it was.
How far behind were you?
Probably 15, no more than 20 feet. I was standing on the right rear running board of Halfback, the follow-up car.
Then you arrive at Parkland Hospital, and I know there's all chaos and trying to get the president in and be treated and all of that. And then you describe this thing, and I know you've said it before, but I'd like to hear it again in your words, that you happened to find a bullet in the back seat. Can you just explain that?
Pay attention, because this is the part that's breaking news. A bombshell in the history of the investigation into the Kennedy assassination.
Well, when I raced to the president's limousine, Mrs. Kennedy was sitting on the left center of the rear seat. And when I got there, I reached over the door, took her by the shoulders and asked if I could help her. And she said no, she wanted to stay with them. And about that time, Clint Hill came around, covered the president's head with his suit coat, and Mrs. Kennedy released him. And they were starting to get up. And as soon as she stood up, right behind where she had been sitting, there was a pristine bullet.
A pristine bullet in the back seat of the car, the seat where the president and the first lady had been sitting.
I picked this bullet up. It was not disformed, other than it had recognized striations on it that it had been fired. I'm looking around. I see no agents behind the car. Everybody was concentrating on the president. So I didn't know what to do right away, but I was afraid this bullet was an important piece of evidence, and I didn't want it to get lost. There were people merging on the car at the time, so I slipped it in my pocket and raced in with the gurney carrying the president's body.
Now, the bullet that you found, you said that it was virtually pristine. So did it look like it had hit anything?
It did not look like it had hit anything. All it had was the striations on the outside. It was just like resting on the top of a seat.
So what do you think? I mean, where do you think this bullet came from?
I had no idea where it came from, other than I was thinking, the president's body.
Because, I mean, there was, in the autopsy, they showed that a bullet hit him in the back. So is that possible that maybe that bullet was the one that hit him in the back?
I think that's very possible. They didn't discover a back wound until we got back to Washington.
I want to pause here in this interview for just a moment and make sure that everybody understands the significance of what Mr. Landis is sharing with us. Rob, can you explain?
It completely destroys the single bullet theory. I mean, we already knew the theory made absolutely no sense, but the discovery of this bullet in the back seat of Kennedy's limo puts the final nail in its coffin.
Walk me through what's so powerful about this information.
As our listeners know, the single bullet theory holds that one bullet supposedly entered Kennedy's back 6 to 8 inches below his neck, then traveled up, exited his neck, then made a turn, entered Governor Connally's back, broke bones in his wrist before winding up in his thigh, and somehow the bullet ends up virtually pristine. So now this pristine bullet would have to have gone through both the president and Governor Connally, breaking multiple bones, then somehow bounce back into the back seat of the car. And if somehow this bullet didn't accomplish all this, it means there had to be more than one shooter, making it a conspiracy.
Okay. While we digest that, let's go back to the Landis interview and hear what else he has to say.
You put the bullet in your pocket, and then you followed them into Parkland Hospital, and then what did you do with the bullet?
Okay, we raced across the emergency room entrance. We made a turn, went down a hallway, And we arrived at trauma room one. There was a crowd of people that had joined us then at that point. And it was kind of pushed into the room. I was just forced up against the examination table right next to his feet. Thought that this was a perfect place to leave a bullet. So I reached into my pocket, took it out, and placed it by the president's left shoe.
And what was the reason that you decided to put it there?
I just thought it was an important piece of evidence. Doctors would find it when they did their examination.
Nobody saw the bullet at that point.
No, because people were shoving, pushing, shouting.
Somebody found it somewhere and entered it into evidence. Do you have any idea who might have picked that up or found it?
Well, I've read things since how the bullet was found. Supposedly it was on Connolly's stretcher. I knew that that was not true. When I saw a picture of the bullet, my immediate reaction was, hey, that's my bullet. Not from Governor Connolly's stretcher. I put it next to the president's feet.
But obviously somebody either moved it or picked it up or whatever, because it is in evidence. I mean, we have pictures of it that we see that were entered into evidence. I don't know if you've seen that picture of it.
Yes, I have. I mean, that's what I recognized.
And I'm just curious why, you know, at this point you decided to come forward.
I've been told, I understand now that the post-traumatic stress, I suffered through this for quite a while. I had to leave the Secret Service. I was suffering too much. The newsreel of the president's head exploding. People have asked me about Dallas. And I just never talked about it.
Listen, I can understand it because, you know, it was so shocking at the time. And then in the 70s, when the Zapruder film was first shown to the public, it's so disturbing and so upsetting. And you were there. Like you said, brain matter is hitting you. I can see how it's a trauma that is beyond description. And I can understand not wanting to relive that. So the Warren Commission, they never asked you to testify or they never questioned you or interviewed you?
No, I assumed once I knew the Warren Commission had been created, I said, well, I'm going to be in for an interview here. And I was dreading it. I was glad it never happened because I knew I would break down there. And that was a very good image for Secret Service agent. The Warren Commission never interviewed any of the other agents that were in the follow-up car.
Well, listen, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you giving me some time to talk. This has been something I've been thinking about since the day it happened. And, every time you hear some new information that may shed more light on what happened that day, people like me and we're getting older, who still care about this are grateful to hear from you and hear what you had to say. So I just want to thank you so much for giving me the time.
Well, thank you for offering me the opportunity. I appreciate it very much.
That was amazing. And not just what we learned from him and the implication that it has on our understanding of the assassination, but he's another person whose life was profoundly impacted by this tragedy. I cannot imagine living with what he has seen for all of these years.
Absolutely. And it's amazing that he's coming forth now to share what he saw. And it rings absolutely true. For years, the pristine bullet was a mystery. Not just how it was in such good shape, but how it was found lying on that stretcher. Nobody could plausibly explain how it got there. But now we have a Secret Service agent who finds the bullet in the back seat of Kennedy's car, and wanting to make sure nobody took it as a souvenir, he picks it up, puts it on the president's gurney. This is the most significant piece of the puzzle that we've been trying to solve for 60 years.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
Hey, girlfriends, it's me, Carol Fisher. I'm so excited to tell you about the brand new series of The Girlfriends. In season one, we told you about the murder of Gail Katz at the hands of my ex-boyfriend, Bob. At one point, a woman's torso washed up on Staten Island and was misidentified as Gail. She spent 9 years in Gail's grave, and then she just disappeared.
It's almost like it's become this moral obligation to find her.
And that's what we're going to do. Find this missing girlfriend and tell her story. With the help of some of your favorite girlfriends from season one, like my producer, Anna.
Oh, my God.
My friend, Dr. Mindy Shapiro.
Hi, it's Dr. Shapiro, and I'd like to speak with the deputy medical examiner.
And, of course, Gail's sister, Elaine Katz.
Having no closure, it kills you.
Join us as we try to solve a 35-year-old cold case. It's not going to be easy, but it's going to be one hell of a ride.
What?
I can't believe this.
Listen to season two of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are you ready to fight back against crime? Hi, guys. Nancy Grace here, host of podcast Crime Stories with Nancy Grace. I've dedicated my life to fighting crime and helping crime victims. For a decade, I prosecuted violent felonies, personally investigating, prosecuting, and covering literally thousands of cases. It's so easy to think it will never happen to me or my family, but that is simply not true. Every day on Crime Stories with Nancy Grace, we shine a light on unsolved homicides, heat up cold cases, and help find missing people, especially children. We speak with family members, investigators, CSI, reporters, and experts in every field. Every day is a mission. Every day is a chance to stop crime and keep one more person safe. Listen to Crime Stories with Nancy Grace on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Who Killed JFK is hosted by Rob Reiner and me, Soledad O'Brien. And our executive producers are Rob Reiner, Michelle Reiner, Matt George, Jason English, David Hoffman, and me, Soledad O'Brien. Our writer is David Hoffman, with research by Dick Russell. Our story editors are Rob Reiner and Julie Pinheiro. Our senior producer is Julie Pinheiro. Our producers are Tristan Nash, Dick Russell, Michelle Goldfein, and Amari Lee. Our editors are Tristan Nash, Julie Pinheiro, and Marcus DeLauro. Our project manager is Carol Klein. Our associate producer is Emilce Quiros. Mixing, mastering, and sound design by Ben Lahoulier. Research and fact-checking by Girl Friday and Emilce Quiros. Business Affairs by Hernan Narea and Jonathan Furman. Our consulting producer is Roseanne Gallegini. Recorded in part at CDM Studio and 4th Street Recording Studio. Show logo by Lucy Quintanilla. Production assistance by Rocco Del Prior and Grace Barron. Special thanks to Joe Honig, Rose Arce, and Dan Storper. If you're enjoying the show, leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast platform. Who Killed JFK is a production of Soledad O'Brien Productions and iHeart Podcasts.
Trinity School of Natural Health can help you be part of the fast-growing health and wellness industry. With an education that empowers communities, Trinity grads can change lives by applying natural health principles and techniques in holistic practices or stores selling nourishing health products. Offering 19 online programs that fit your busy schedule, you'll get training to help turn your passion into a career. Enroll today at trinityschool.org. That's trinityschool.org.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Dura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's like the police knew who he was before they got here.
From iHeart Podcasts.
The medical school dean at USC was leading a secret double life.
He's breathing right now?
Yes, he's absolutely breathing. I'm a doctor, actually.
A story about money, power, and corruption.
When people fall in line, they fall in line.
Looking back, I realized, everyone knew.
I'm Paul Pringle, an investigative reporter for the LA Times. Listen to Fallen Angels, a story of California corruption on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcasts.